Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
We can deliver value to that advisor because that's what they're telling that they want to engage in. We want to make sure that we're putting the right pieces of content in front of them at the right time.
Salim, so great to finally have you on the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Nate. Excited to be here.
All right. So as I mentioned, among several other very interesting responsibilities you have at Vettafi, which you can certainly talk more about, you are tasked with compiling and analyzing advisor-based ETF trend data, where you're essentially looking at thousands of financial advisor visits to the various Vettafi web properties. So that includes ETFtrends.com, ETFDB.com, and AdvisorPerspectives.com. And then, as I understand it, you're basically teasing out what this all means from a behavioral intelligence perspective. And I think you may already know, because I have said this countless times on the podcast in the past, I absolutely love stuff like this because I feel like it truly offers a real-time window into how advisors are thinking and what's important to them and obviously ultimately their clients. And so I thought, let's do this. You haven't been on the podcast before. This is your ETF Prime debut. So why don't we start by having you offer a quick intro of yourself and your role at Vettafi. And then again, I'm excited to dig into this behavioral intelligence data.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Nate. So a little bit about my background before we jump into the behavioral intelligence piece. I'm a recovering programmer and data geek from my previous lives. I've worked for IBM, Standard & Poor's, and their bond rating division, as well as Dun & Bradstreet. And more recently, I worked with Discovery Data, which is a firm that collects data on financial advisors. And then I made the move to Vettafi nearly a year ago. Vettafi was unique in that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, a number of marquee properties, ETFDB.com, ETF Trends, Advisor Perspectives, collecting a tremendous amount of digital behavioral intelligence data. And I found that to be really intriguing, you know, coming from the data and programming angle. So I find myself here as Chief Digital Product Officer, responsible for helping all of our asset management customers go to market with new products or existing products using different digital and marketing tactics to really bring those products to market.
All right. And so we've alluded to this just at a high level, but with this behavioral intelligence data we're going to look at today, you don't need to go into the weeds here, but high level, can you sort of summarize what this is and how it's compiled?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the best way to describe what behavioral intelligence data is it's the digital body language of what advisors are doing on the web. And so when we talk about behavioral data, it refers to the information that we collect about actions, activities, habits that individual advisors or groups of advisors may be exhibiting online. Some of those things may include things like email clicks, web page visits, webcast attendance, engagement with social, that sort of thing, or even podcast listens, for instance. You know, that might be another signal and an advisor might be interested in a particular asset class. But ultimately, we're looking at these different data points across our web properties. And so we get nearly 1 million plus monthly active users that hit ETFdatabase.com, ETF Trends, Advisor Perspectives. And we're able to use that information to determine what it is that advisors, which specific asset class advisors, are actually interested in at this very moment in time. So it's real-time data that we're collecting that is telling us, is an advisor interested in fixed income products or are they interested in equities? If it's equities, is it U.S. or international? If it's international, is it a specific area within international that they're interested? So, you know, we're able to delve in at the asset class level, but then also very granular levels as well, down to energy, gold, crypto, you name the thematic or the individual sector, and we're able to see exactly what advisors are engaging with from a digital standpoint.
All right, so you set us up absolutely perfectly, because let's get into the trends you're seeing in the data over the past month or so. These are from your most recent report. And look, you highlighted three broad areas, which I would say The first one makes complete sense to me. I wasn't surprised at all. The second one I found extremely interesting, and I can't wait to hear your take on. And then the third one I would say was a bit surprising to me. But let's take these in pieces. So the first trend you noted is a clear preference among advisors for U.S. equities. Again, makes complete sense to me, but I'd love to have you talk a little bit about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the first trend we saw for the month of March. And I just want to preface this by saying that this was data from March, and this is before the CPI and PPI numbers came out. So just want to make that clear. Obviously, we're seeing a difference now in April, right? A little bit of a downturn in equities. But in March, we did see that U.S. equities were dominating from an engagement standpoint. And when we talk about engagement at Vettify and with our behavioral intelligence data, it's done on a 100% basis. So if you think about it, we've got 10 high-level asset classes, everything from U.S. fixed income to equities to international and various other asset classes. It's a 100% basis. U.S. equities took up 35% of the airtime or the engagement with content for the month of March. So it was by far the biggest area. Now, the second biggest area was international equities with 20%. So between U.S. and international equities, we saw almost a 55% engagement share. Now, clearly, you know, advisors were quite interested in the asset class, as you saw in March. I think both the SPY and Triple Q, and you saw the continued run-up in both NASDAQ and the S&P 500. So that continued in March, and it wasn't abating, and we're seeing that in the engagement numbers here.
Very interesting. And actually, here in a little bit, I want to ask you about the data you're seeing more recently. I'm curious to hear whether or not that has changed at all, given what we've seen in the markets here over the past few weeks. Okay, the second trend you highlighted is that there's clear evidence of dynamic allocation strategies among financial advisors. And I mentioned I found this one very interesting. The reason for that is because, as I understand it, you determine this by looking at how much fluctuation and engagement there was across different asset classes throughout the month. And so explain how you did that, and then I want to talk takeaways here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you described it really well there. What we do is we look at the fluctuations in the percentage engagement. So what we do is we split up the month to individual days, and we look at the fluctuation that goes on a day-to-day basis. And if we start seeing fluctuations that go above a typical mean, that means that there might be dynamic allocation going on in the near future. What we saw in the month of March was U.S. equities saw a tremendous amount of volatility. So we did see, you know, engagement fluctuate by 16 points. So that 35% that I mentioned earlier, the over-under on that, the standard deviation, was about 16 points over or under in the month of March. We saw the same thing for international equities. Leveraged products also saw a 16% fluctuation from its median. And so when you start seeing such huge fluctuations, it starts to beg the question, are advisors starting to rethink their strategies, and are they starting to get either dynamic or tactical? Now, you know, historically, we've looked at this, and, you know, when we start seeing this sort of volatility, it is typically something that signals a change maybe coming in the near future, right? A change towards a different asset class or different sector or different thematic.
Well, and that maybe gets into a question I had around this, just as I think about takeaways, and feel free to offer any other thoughts here. But if you look at the historical data on this, what I believe you call engagement volatility or engagement fluctuation, does that tend to sync up pretty well to market volatility and key macro events, those sorts of things? Like if market conditions are clearly changing and perhaps volatility is increasing, will you see that clearly reflected in the engagement volatility?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so absolutely. So we haven't done a full correlation analysis. I just want to put that out there. But I am seeing a link between volatility measured by VIX and interest in various asset classes. So in mid-March, we did see some interesting peaks for the VIX around March 11th, March 15th, the mid-March timeframe. And on both of those days, we saw engagement with leverage products increase, as well as commodities start to spike. And even in the days leading up to those particular dates, March 11th and 15th, we did start to see a swell in interest in leverage and commodities that was above the median, above the average that we typically see for engagement for that particular asset class. And so, you know, generally speaking, when we see these significant changes above or below for each of the asset classes, it's demonstrating that there's evidence of dynamic allocation, right, that is tied to the volatility that you're seeing in the marketplace. So absolutely, you know, we do see some correlation, leading correlation between our data, the data we're seeing where advisors are engaging with specific asset classes, and the VIX, for instance, right, which is the measure of volatility. So we do definitely see that.
I should have asked you this earlier, but as we go through this particular trend and this engagement volatility, I'm guessing some listeners will find this as fascinating as I do. Is this data accessible to anyone? I know this is compiled, or correct me if I'm wrong, in what's called your Explorer tool. Is this something available to everybody? Is it a subscription? Like how do you get access to this?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is available to asset managers. So it's available at explorer.vettify.com. You can actually sign up for a trial instance on that website. And so it is actually something that is available to all asset managers. And then if you want to delve deeper to see which specific individuals or advisors were actually interested in specific products, we do have a product for that called Soloist, which can get you what we call lead intelligence. Information.
Interesting. Does that go down to the ticker level?
Yes, it will go down to, it'll start at the asset class level and go all the way down to the ticker level as well. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. The third broader trend you noted, which I would say it probably somewhat ties into the engagement volatility we just discussed, but this was the one I found most surprising, and that's that you saw an uptick in interest around leveraged and inverse products. So explain what you found there and I guess how you interpret that.
Yeah, this was a really interesting one. We started to see a little bit of a peak in March around leverage and inverse products. And I think what this is advisors are baking in potential downside risk. The products under the leverage and inverse space are typically those long short products, the 2X or 3X products that are in the market. And when you start to see a steady engagement in articles and content that we produce that fit under this category, you tend to see more of a dynamic allocation strategy from advisors. Now, you know, these products don't typically make up a core part of the portfolio for advisors, but there are so many products in the space that advisors are just trying to wrap their heads around and try to understand, what differentiates them, which ones make sense within their customers' portfolios. And so it was interesting to see that uptick. But it makes sense given what we're seeing now in April, right, which is a little bit more of a downturn. And I think advisors saw, you know, a potential opportunity here to maybe allocate a little bit to these leveraged and inverse products.
Yeah, I definitely found that interesting. You mentioned these products don't typically make up the core part of a portfolio. I hope not. And for anybody listening, please make sure you understand how leveraged and inverse ETFs work before allocating. These are typically very short-term trading tools. That's my public service announcement for today. Salim, just a few minutes left here. You mentioned earlier that this data we looked at with these three trends was from March and I guess alluded to what the newer trends may be that are out there. And, you know, when I think about this behavioral intelligence data, this is obviously a living, breathing thing, right? It's constantly being updated. So have you seen any noteworthy trends here more recently?
Yes, absolutely. We're starting to see a definite shift in April. So we do see here that, you know, we haven't done the full correlation analysis yet, but anecdotally, we are seeing a link between volatility and interest in various sectors. So on April 16th and 19th, when I think the Fed chair spoke, we saw a huge run-up in VIX. And the days leading up to that, we did see a significant run-up in U.S. fixed income, as well as international fixed income. It jumped significantly above its average. So some of the risk-off strategies and cautious strategies are coming back in vogue. We're also seeing more interest in commodities and alts in the month of April. So relative to March, you know, that uptick is quite a bit more. The interesting thing also is the amount of fluctuation we talked about earlier, where we kind of measure month over month fluctuation. We're seeing a lot of fluctuation in U.S. and international equities. So the fluctuation has become even more dramatic in the month of April. And so that is signaling once again, advisors are clamoring for as much information as they can about what's going on within both U.S. and international equity markets. But then at the same time, they're looking at fixed income products. They're looking at commodity products. These are risk-off sort of strategies. And they're looking at that in mass quite a bit more than they did in the month prior. So we are definitely seeing a shift in advisor behavior in the month of April.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Just again, this is real-time data. And what you just described is, I think, about the environment right now. We've seen this recent uptick in interest rates. And so I think managing rate risk and fixed income is probably driving some interest around that, right? Looking at different fixed income ETF options and how to navigate the rate environment. So that one makes sense. Obviously, there are still a lot of concerns around inflation with some of that recent CPI and PPI data we've seen. So it makes sense to see some interest around commodities and, you know, sort of the reflation trade. And then alts, you know, I think anytime we see, even though it's been a short period of time here, anytime we see both stocks and bonds move down together, as we have recently with rates rising, you can see why advisors might look towards alternatives. But it's just interesting, again, to me how quickly that data updates. Selene, before I let you go, you know, these trends we discussed today are obviously based on advisor engagement data, as we, I think, clearly laid out. But I'm curious, do you also look at ETF flows as well to sort of validate these trends that you're seeing, or do you think there's too much noise in trying to do that?
We do. We do look at the flow data as well. I can give two quick anecdotes. One is from last summer when the Fed started its rate-raising campaign and we saw two-year Treasury starting to top, you know, 5%. You know, we did see an uptick in interest in fixed income products leading up to those rate changes. I think advisors and the general market was just baking in the idea that the Fed was going to start raising rates. And so we did see interest in fixed income, U.S. fixed income, hit a peak in July of 2023 and June of 2023, leading up to some of those changes. And we also saw inflows reflect that in the coming months. So in July, August, September timeframe, and all throughout the remainder of 2023, there was tremendous inflow into fixed income products like we haven't seen in years. And so that was, you know, one anecdote. And then more recently, you know, this month, one thing to note here from an inflow standpoint, we just talked a little bit about, you know, a move towards fixed income commodities and alts. I'm looking at the flow data, 1 month flow data for commodities. It's starting to accelerate significantly. So we're looking at 70 million in 1 month inflows for commodities, 165 million in 1 week, and 529 million in 1 day alone. That's yesterday, right? So it's accelerating quite a bit for commodities. We're seeing the same thing for alternatives. We're seeing a slowdown in outflows, which means inflows are about to start coming in. And then also for fixed income products, we are seeing, you know, significant inflows start to come in there as well. So, you know, the engagement data is definitely a leading indicator towards where flows may be headed, but it's more trend-based. It's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation, but it generally gives you an idea of where the puck may be headed in the near future.
Well, Selene, great stuff this week. Like I said, I always love looking at data like this. I just find it so interesting. We're definitely going to have to do this again. Thank you for joining me this week.
Great. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
That was Selene Khan, Chief Digital Product Officer at VettaFi.